Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the Media Research Center, the Newsbusters podcast, coming to you from Reston, Virginia. You know, we usually record these things, these weekly podcasts, on Wednesday morning. So I think we knew last Wednesday that it was going to be an eventful day. We were talking in the morning about Raphael Warnock being elected to the Senate. We didn't really know what was going to happen next, and certainly could not have imagined what was going to happen next. And so, it was a terrible day. It was a depressing day. It was a humiliating day. Because what have we said on Newsbusters for years? But that all this talk of democracy dies in darkness was a bunch of pompous baloney. So, you know, the Washington Post had this. The New York Times said the truth is more important now than ever. And you say, why now? And this happens. I mean, I think that it was one of those things where we had a lot of conversations in my social media, because my main point was, this is not a time to talk about double standards with the left. This is not a time to talk double standards. This is a time to talk about standards. This is our standard. Our standard is civility. Our standard is respect for our institutions. Certainly it means respect for where our Congress meets. And people said, Tim, they have a double standard. They were all in support of rioting when they think it's going to affect social change. Yes, I will grant that. But in the aftermath of this, in the shame and the humiliation and the disappointment and the outrage over this happening at our Capitol, you know, I came here with my dad and my mom and my brothers and sisters in 1976 during the bicentennial, and stood in the rotunda and just felt amazed at the country we live in. And I moved here in 1986 and worked at the Republican National Committee when I was a youngster, and went to the Capitol South Metro, and I saw that dome all the time, and it never stops being amazing. So it's heartbreaking that we would have rioting at the Capitol. And it's embarrassing because we, for many years, mocked the whole idea that this kind of thing would ever happen. So, for example, you know, the other day, a guy named William Burns is one of those Obama-Biden veterans Biden's nominated to be the director of the CIA. And they're on MSNBC, and Andrea Mitchell says he's a legendary diplomat. And Adam Schiff responds, he's a phenomenal diplomat. And we all have our usual reflexes here, which is legendary and phenomenal means he's a Democrat. And, you know, so I went and looked at, for example, a CNN article online about Bill Burns. And sure enough, Bill Burns has talked extensively about the damage he believes the Trump administration has inflicted on the United States. Pre-January 6, what would we say? Oh, here it comes. Bill Burns warned of the dangerous consequences of Donald Trump not accepting election defeat last August in the Atlantic. Burns wrote, if he loses, I doubt he will suddenly embrace the traditional bipartisan commitment to effective transitions. At best, he'll be consumed by efforts to rationalize his defeat and paint the election as rigged. At worst, he'll seek to contest or undermine the result. Like so many other features of the Trump era, the transition would bear little resemblance to any before or any of the many I served through as a career diplomat. The costs of confusion, mixed signals, and bureaucratic turmoil could be very high. That's all true. In fact, what Burns wrote here is understated now, because the Trump transition came to a point where there was a Capitol Hill riot. And you can't erase that, and you shouldn't erase that. Now, that's not to say there's going to come a time, and I guess it's already come. I just wasn't in that place last week. It's quite easy to say. Yes, the leftists have a different standard. Yes, the left favored rioting, but that's their position. That's not our position. And we should stick to our position and not just say, well, you did it so we can do it. I mean, that's not the way it is. Now, we all understand and can guess that if this had turned out the other way and Trump had won as narrowly as Biden did, you know, by 4 points, or less narrowly than he did in 2016, there probably would have been rioting in the streets in many cities. I don't think that that's an inaccurate guess. But that's not the way it happened. But we can see it. For example, we all saw yesterday Project Veritas put out this sting video on a lawyer, a principal counsel for PBS named Michael Beller. And of course, they get somebody who, some young person, I'm guessing, in this case, a young lady, who kind of, I'm guessing, you know, sucks up to them and treats them like a wonderful human expert so that they say all kinds of incriminating things. So in one of these clips, Michael Beller says, Trump is close to Hitler, which of course is the CNN line. And the Project Veritas operative says, well, what are you going to do if we don't win? Meaning the Democrats. And Beller jokes, go to the White House and throw Molotov cocktails. Now, we understand that when Team Trump jokes, it ain't a joke. And we can certainly understand that when Beller says this, even in a way of being humorous, it was not going to go over well at PBS. It did not take long for PBS to say, we can't have this person on our staff, and say, we here at PBS are not about hate, which would only seem true if you don't watch PBS. The one I tweeted yesterday was the old clip where David Brooks in the PBS NewsHour compares Ted Cruz and his dad to Satan with their satanic overtones. Yeah, no hate at PBS. Not for conservatives. But what they caught here at PBS was that classic case of them being snobs. Of them thinking, well, it's too bad that America's so full of dumb people. He literally says this. You know, Beller said he was happy to live in D.C. instead of small towns. He said, literally, this is the quote now, Americans are so effing dumb. You know, most people are dumb. It's good to live in a place where people are educated and know stuff. Could you imagine if you lived in one of these other towns or cities where everybody's just stupid? Earth to Beller. I grew up in Viroqua, Wisconsin. It was a town when I was growing up of about 3,700 people. It is precisely one of those towns you would say was a dumb hick town. It's a two-stoplight dairy farming town. And it's America, Jack. Or Bob. Now, I was a snobby 18-year-old. When I graduated high school, boy, I was ready to go to college. I was ready to go where people are, quote-unquote, educated and know stuff. But some of us grow up, and then you go home and you realize, I was snobby. This is a wonderful place. This is where I was raised. I have great reverence for it. I have reverence for Western Wisconsin, just like I have reverence for Capitol Hill. And it's sad that a national broadcasting network with stations from coast to coast, this is what they really think. This is who they really are. There are the educated liberal Democrats, and if you voted for Trump, you're obviously a mouth-breathing moron. And they don't seem to understand that maybe people vote for Trump. Some people love him. My father, bless his heart, loves Trump. Maybe not so much lately, but was a big supporter. And I had debates with him back in 2015 and 16. I was more of a Ted Cruz guy. But, you know, that's just me. I always end up supporting candidates who don't win. that's just generally, you can go all the way back to 88, 92. I always pick the wrong one. Anyway, people who vote for Trump aren't stupid. There were many very educated people who voted for Trump, this time. Just the snobbery of these people. And what it shows you is, yes, they live in a bubble. And we have that problem in America where too many people live in a bubble. We here at Newsbusters have a job where we're absorbed for 8 hours every day in liberal television and newspapers and magazines and websites. We are the opposite of people who live in a bubble. Part of what we do here is to say to people, get out of your bubble. I say to every conservative, get out of your bubble. If the best you can do is come absorb what we're showing you at Newsbusters, please do that. Don't be in a silo. Because being in a silo might lead to stuff like January 6th. But this is not new at PBS, and it's not new at NPR. Project Veritas back in 2011 pulled this same thing on NPR. Somehow, they got a lunch with two fundraisers at NPR by posing as some sort of Muslim nonprofit. So two guys pose as basically Muslim leftists and have lunch with their hidden cameras with these fundraisers. And a guy named Ron Schiller was the Robert Beller of that exercise, where he was caught on hidden camera saying the Tea Party was full of white, middle America, gun-toting, racist people. Oops! And he said the exact same thing that Beller did. He said, I am most disturbed and disappointed in this country, which is the educated so-called elite in this country is too small a percentage of the population, so that you have this very large uneducated part of the population that carries these ideas, the Tea Party ideas. Why must the liberals, the people who call themselves liberals, the people who call themselves progressive, the people who call themselves tolerant, somehow have the position that everybody who disagrees with them is counted as the uneducated part of the United States? The dummies. You know, it's even worse with Beller. One of the things I didn't get to is that Beller was asked about coronavirus. And he basically said, you know, it's great that the red states have, the coronavirus is spiking in the red states. I mean, that certainly would put you on the fast track to being fired. He basically said, well, what's good about this is those red state people can't come out and vote, or they're sick and dying. Like, he's smiling when he's talking about red state dummies who are sick and dying of COVID. That is snobbery. You know, civility and unity, which is what everybody's chatting about now with the onset of Biden, you know where it starts? It starts with acknowledging that people who disagree with you aren't evil, and that people who disagree with you aren't stupid, and that people who disagree with you don't want to destroy America. Now, we can certainly look at things and say what the Green New Deal is certainly seems to destroy the idea of America as we understand it. You know, you can make that argument. But you have to try to acknowledge that democracy does mean I'm going to listen to you, I'm going to disagree with you, I'm going to debate you. And personally, I'm all for being divisive or dividing. Politics is dividing. Politics is a debate between two sides, maybe sometimes more than two sides. But I think that this whole idea that we can't have a debate, let's hopefully we can have a debate. Let's hope we can have something closer to normalcy. So let me just make this final point about public broadcasting. Public broadcasting will fire a Robert Beller. They will fire a Ron Schiller. And the project continues. They passed the Public Broadcasting Act of 1967 because they perceived that ABC and CBS and NBC weren't public service oriented enough. There needed to be another liberal channel, a more full-throated liberal channel. And that bias continues. It never stops. So PBS or NPR can fire somebody. Project Veritas can say, aha, success. But the bias continues. I mean, this is something we've been doing the entire time here at the MRC. It's been a personal passion of mine since I started here in 1989. And my son, Benjamin, reminds me that, you know, I testified at the House in 1999 after a fundraising scandal because the WGBH in Boston was getting direct mail lists from the Democrats because they knew, how do we raise money for PBS? By sending emails or sending post letters to Democrats, because that's who PBS is. So the Republicans were a little upset at this on the House side, and they had a hearing. And I was on a panel with Ken Burns, the insufferable Ken Burns. Anyway, I was allowed to give an opening statement. That video still exists. Let's just give you a flavor of what we said then. And just remember, this is exactly how it still is now.
We're not here to debate whether the Democrats could offer counterexamples to the hundreds of examples of unfairness to conservatives. Has NPR's Nina Totenberg ever done to Democratic Supreme Court nominees what she did to Douglas Ginsburg or Clarence Thomas? Has WGBH's Frontline series ever suggested that a Democratic administration conducted an illegal foreign policy worthy of the suggestive title High Crimes and Misdemeanors? We're not here to debate whether the Democrats could offer many Republican names at the top of PBS or NPR, which have resembled a revolving door of former Democratic partisans, from Irvin Dugan and Delano Lewis to Douglas Bennett and Frank Mankiewicz. Contrary to the assertions of some congressional staff, this left-leaning public image of PBS and NPR is not a myth, but an image that is both well-earned and well-documented.
So nothing ever changes. Those of you youngsters who don't know what the 1980s were, for some of us, those were the golden years. Nothing ever changes. So obviously, there's dramatic changes in the tech sphere, in the big tech sphere. And with all of that, we turn to Corinne Weaver.
Hello.
Who's one of many Media Research Center employees who was an intern first. A culture intern. So, and a graduate of Christendom College.
Yes, sir.
In lovely Front Royal, Virginia.
Absolutely.
So, Corinne works on one of our websites called censortrack.org. Censor, like, you know, C-E-N-S-O-R. Okay? Mm-hmm. Censortrack.org. And our tech people are counting all the time examples of tech censorship and temporary. So much of this stuff's really temporary, and some of it's just comical. I wanted to start with this one. Not the bee. Mm-hmm. I found this on CensorTrack. Not the bee, which is a related website to Babylon Bee. It's like Babylon Bee, but we're not joking. Mm-hmm. Noticed on their Instagram page said, Twitter is allowing the phrase, hang Mike Pence to trend. Like, what is wrong with Twitter that they're going to try to deplatform the violence and the threats, but hang Mike Pence is allowed on Twitter? And then what happened?
They were fact-checked,
I believe. The Instagram, they took the post down from Not the Bee.
Yep.
Like, we can't have you discussing hang Mike Pence.
No, which is bizarre. I mean, are you going to take down Twitter, too? My question.
Well, it just means to me, when I look at stuff like this, and I think this is the impression you get when you come to CensorTrack or you go to the Tech Watch part of Newsbusters, and that is, these people seem to just be watching the conservatives and the Trump fans.
That's true.
I mean, so you've been working on a number. We've been talking after the election about how many, or I guess it's maybe it's some of it's before the election, counting mm-hmm. how many times Trump's tweets have been marked as or censored or marked as not true. Mm-hmm. And it was like 625 for Trump and zero for Biden or something?
It was 668 for Trump. We started, we counted as soon as Biden announced his campaign. So it would have been March 31st, 2018. And we started counting from there on. And the Twitter label maker had labeled Trump's tweets, it was insane. We were getting to a point where it was peaking at like 20 labels a day. Mm. So, I mean, the president certainly tweets quite a bit, but that's a lot of labels, guys.
Yeah, I think it also relates to the way that these so-called fact checkers operate. Obviously, these websites use fact checkers to put in their warnings or their... the way Facebook puts a gray screen over your meme because of fact checkers. And I should say that on censortrack.org, they go into the Facebook fact checkers. They go into PolitiFact, lead stories, and there's another one that I can't.
There's like 10.
All of these, and I certainly PolitiFact is a personal whack-a-mole of mine, They're going to do 20 fact checks on Trump for every one they do on Biden.
The kicker, though, for Twitter was that they didn't actually have any connections to what the liberal media would consider a viable fact-checking source. They were just fact-checking it on the fly. So what I believe is they had their algorithm set up to just label whatever had the keywords they were looking for. Mm. So you would end up with a completely innocuous tweet that had nothing to do with anything election related, and it would say at the bottom, "This claim has been disputed."
So I'm guessing then it would be words like rigged or fraud.
Votes. I believe a few tweets where he was encouraging people to vote in Georgia were flagged.
It's disputed that you need to vote in Georgia.
Yeah, we're disputing that right now.
The one I liked is, I don't know if you saw this one, it was, I think I'm going to mispronounce it, Rita Panahi had a tweet where it had Jack Dorsey saying Twitter's a free speech site, and she put, "This claim is disputed."
That was perfect. My favorite one that came out of that was a meme. It was a Ron Paul tweet that was discussing Osama bin Laden. And at the bottom it said, "Osama bin Laden's actions are not fully framed in context." And somebody wrote, "From a Nokia cell phone."
So 668 to zero would be the current count. And we could say some of these, like if Trump says I wanted a landslide, is obviously something that's not just disputed. So, okay, just like when I say, I've always talked about the fact checkers, and I say, when President Trump says windmills cause cancer, I think you could put a pants on fire on that one. But why does Biden have a zero? So you're telling me it goes all the way back to March of 2020?
March of 2018.
March of 2018?
Yes.
So we're almost 3 years. Sorry, I wasn't listening well. I flunk. March of 2018, and he's got a zero.
Yep. Big old zero.
And this is what, just right now, it's like, I went this morning to PolitiFact's Joe Biden page to see how many Joe Biden fact checks they have.
They have
so
a few.
Far. Well, I went for, okay, how many in this... in the last couple of weeks, there's one, and it's a true. Mm-hmm. And, it's Trump doesn't have any facts on it, I won the election. Mm-hmm. True. I mean, a lot of times with Democrats, they'll do these where they'll basically take a statement that nobody finds controversial.
Yes.
Let's say,
and
true.
Yeah.
So Biden's got a true. Now, Biden can go out in a press conference and say, Trump and his backers are like the Joseph Goebbels, and they've got a big lie. And liberals all hear that and say, true.
Yeah.
You can compare Trump and his supporters to Nazis, and we don't throw a flag. But PolitiFact, when David Perdue said John Ossoff is a socialist, they were like, "Woo, woo! No, you can't call him a socialist."
Right.
To me, there's just a dramatic level in the sensitivity. That's got to be what you guys find all the time.
It's nuance. They don't pick up on nuance. It seems to be that they have a quota. I did a study on some of the fact checkers for Kamala Harris statements at one point, and it seems to be that they definitely have a quota of fact checks that they are supposed to do on certain statements made about a politician,
right,
but not necessarily the politician themselves. So you'll find plenty of fact checks on what people said about a liberal politician, but you won't find as many from their statements. So
that's true. Like, for example, there is a search engine at PolitiFact if you wanted to play this game. Here's the name I would nominate: Ilhan Omar. So what you're going to find is Ilhan Omar has been fact-checked, like, okay, I could be wrong now because it's been a while, 5 times, mm-hmm. you know, in the last mm-hmm. 2 years. Mm-hmm. And there'll be 85 defending Ilhan Omar fact-checks.
Oh, and they've done entire academic studies where they've looked at how many tweets were done about Ilhan Omar that were apparently factually incorrect, and how she's one of the more persecuted politicians. But you won't hear anything about, oh, here's what she said and here's why she said isn't actually true.
Well, I think this is something that's going to be up to all of us now, is to try to say, what is it that Joe Biden said, that Kamala Harris said, that Ocasio-Cortez said, that Nancy Pelosi said, that we would nominate for this needs a fact check. Now, PolitiFact has a hashtag called PolitiFact This, with a capital T, to nominate things for them to look at. Mm-hmm. And we could try this. I mean, it's kind of more performance art at this point than a serious thing. But I mean, this is what's going to be important, is to try to say, people say things all the time that are harsh, beyond harsh, about conservatives. And liberals hear that and they say, fair statement. Trump and his backers seem like Goebbels. Fair statement. And they can all run around saying big lie. Biden says it, CNN says it, everybody says it on the liberal side. And they're all basically using this notion that Trump's like a Nazi, and everybody who voted for him was basically voting for a Nazi. And that's just accepted discourse. So to me, it isn't really about fact-checking at the end of the day. Fact-checking is good. Fact-checking is what journalists should be doing.
Yeah.
But a lot of times it's like our notion of what the facts are is we have a princess and the pea level of sensitivity. How dare Vogue magazine put a cover of Kamala Harris with her in sneakers?
Oh, the horror.
She took the picture. She dressed for that photo. But that's, I mean, they're so hypersensitive that, you know, you can't. Biden and Harris are going to be in some sort of protection program. They're not going to be fact-checked. That's what we're going to be looking to do. So you were, before you were Miss Censor Track, did a lot of cultural work.
Yes.
You're a big buff of the TV and the movies.
I am.
And so I was, did a column yesterday about Alec Baldwin, and Alec Baldwin's had some real goofball tweets.
Oh, jeez.
And Alec Baldwin is probably also a zero. I nominate that for your next study. How many times has Alec Baldwin had a content warning? It is in dispute.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Alec Baldwin, potentially Kathy Griffin. I'm pretty sure neither of them have gotten taken down at all.
Obviously, Kathy Griffin suffered for what she tweeted.
Yeah.
But also was lionized for it. But I mean, I think that this, you know, the point I was making is that, yeah, the Hollywood left has had all kinds of fiendishly wrong things to say about Trump and Republicans. And there's no, this item is disputed. I mean, they're basically, if you look at these people's labels of disputed, you would think that everything liberals say is not disputed.
I would argue that it only seems to be a certain hierarchy of liberals. Because I do recall AOC getting fact-checked quite a bit before she won her primary. I do recall them going after her quite a bit. And then once she won her primary and once she was the candidate for that particular district, the fact checks seemed to dry up. You didn't see as many anymore.
I would say of the squad members, she's probably got the most fact checks, but it's still tiny.
Yeah.
Again, yes, she is what would we call her? You know, somebody that people on Twitter love to mock, love to run her videos and say, listen to this insane thing she said.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I look at your number at 668 for Trump, warnings, zero for Biden. And it's like, I think you can feel the way the liberals are about this, which was always to fact check Biden, to warn anybody of Biden normalizes Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, I mean, does that, you feel like that's got to be why there's a zero?
I would think so. I think perhaps they feel justified in going after people that aren't part of their own side, people that they're not, they feel that they're not supposed to defend. I feel like you get stuck in a rut when you're pro-Biden, you're writing about Biden and Trump, and you don't like Trump. So you end up becoming just very, very sensitive, picky, perhaps. Grammar Nazi comes to mind, where it's like, oh, let's correct his spelling in a fact check.
Yeah.
It's like we all have our bad days where we misspell things or we get some dates wrong. You know, it doesn't need to be this. I mean, Biden is the king of gaffes.
Well, and that's the other point. Yes. I mean, this is an obvious point. And the problem with the fact-checking game isn't just the whether something's true or false. We've gotten a lot of things that have gotten taken down or gotten the gray screen on Facebook for, quote-unquote, missing context.
Which is extremely subjective.
Yeah.
Define the context that it's missing.
Yeah,
and somebody will send you a book of things that they'd like you to include in order to get the complete context. Well, that's lovely. You can't fit that in a headline, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jen Psaki is wearing a hat with the Soviet hammer and sickle on it. Conservatives make fun of it, and they go, this is missing context. She was standing next to a Russian government official, and I guess they were just trying to be pals. So she was wearing the hammer and sickle, you know, to be diplomatic. Oh, okay, let's try this with a Nazi swastika.
Yes.
But again, what you're going to find, I think, is that liberals think, well, the hammer and sickle is nothing like that.
Well, they don't understand history. They don't understand the history of the people that died in gulags or the history of the oppressed countries. I mean, it's hilarious how the whining about colonizing keeps coming up over and over again. But we're not going to talk about Soviet colonizing of Eastern Europe, Central Europe, countries like that. No? Okay.
Well, and we, you know, sometimes when we come to you young people, you even wonder how much people understand Soviet history and understand what communism is and that they do polls of young people that scare the heck out of the older people about how much they like socialism as compared to capitalism. Ooh. So, actually, I wanted to mention this to you.
Mm-hmm.
Young person, and that is that in the very early days of the internet, the Democrats put out this packet, like this 600-page packet, about the trail of anti-Clinton, and this were the words, conspiracy commerce. So this whole pressure to try to squash conservative media narratives is as old as the internet.
Yes.
It's just, to me, looks more effective now.
I think they're trying to say that conspiracy theories lead to dangerous actions and crazy people doing crazy things, which at the end of the day, though, even when you read, if you read something from CNN that is simply speculation, you could argue that because it's not necessarily based on fact, it's just speculation, you could argue that that's technically a conspiracy theory.
Oh, very much so. CNN, I mean, let's face it. CNN was the conspiracy news network for most of the Trump administration. And, I mean, Brian Stelter had some kook on his show who said that because of climate change, Trump's going to end up killing more people than Hitler, Stalin, and Mao combined. Now, nobody said this is disputed.
Oh, my favorite is from MSNBC from the Trump era, where they had somebody on who claimed that Trump was raising the flags on August 8th, which stood for 8-8, which was a Hitler symbol.
Yeah.
And so therefore, these were the things that we needed to be on the lookout for, because you never know.
I should state, now I correct myself, this wackadoo statement on Stelter Show actually did get a PolitiFact ding. But yes, if it's this whole notion of when you suggest, as people routinely did with Trump, that he was a Russian agent, that he was like Hitler, like he was Stalin, like he was Mao, and then say, when you call us fake news, you're endangering our lives. I always had problems with that. Like, well, you're calling him Hitler and Stalin. You don't think somebody's going to take a whack at him after you use that kind of terminology? I want to close with a personal note, and that is Corinne's Twitter handle is Descartes Lover.
Thank you.
Why? So why Descartes?
He is my favorite philosopher. I went to my college, Catholic college. We studied Aquinas. We studied Aquinas for 3 years. And I love Aquinas. I love the theological and philosophical bent. But I appreciated the fact that Descartes thought outside of the box when it came to philosophy and tried to come up with different reasons. I'm not saying he was necessarily correct, but I appreciated the style. So my whole point to, you know, my appreciation of Descartes comes from his ability to think outside of the box with difficult subjects like philosophy.
Well, I did that for two reasons, Corinne. One was that I wanted people to follow you on Twitter. And the second reason was, see, people, when they try to say Trump supporters or conservatives or Republicans or Christian conservatives or a bunch of stupid people, not true. All right? So, when you want to come to Newsbusters, please come. Please read Corinne. Please read TechWatch. There's a label there at TechWatch that you can click on TechWatch and read all the TechWatch pieces. CensorTrack.org. Okay? Come to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.